Hello, everyone. Welcome back to another episode of the Craft of the Draft podcast. This week, we're just going to do another Talent League review, go through the latest round, and Ally Squad has dropped as well. So we're going to go through that as usual. Start with a question, but the question is actually something we posted on our Instagram story the other night, and it's very general. Works to what we do. Who's not getting enough attention or who deserves more attention? You wrote down some names of answers we got, and we've also got two of our own that we're going to put out there. So read through a few of the answers we got.
Yeah, and it's an interesting question because we obviously pride ourselves on giving attention to the players that do fly under the radar in the mainstream media, but inevitably there are still some that slip through the cracks. So the answers from the audience, firstly, we'll start with Kane Hurst and Mitch Kirkwood-Scott. I know you watched Mitch Kirkwood-Scott's game closely, or part of it closely, on Saturday for the Sandringham Dragons, and I did so with Kane Hurst's yesterday for Dandenong in their thrilling draw. So good to see them getting some attention, and we will certainly give that to them on this podcast. Holly Egan doing really well in some trying circumstances for the Murray Bush Rangers. Obviously, they've had some tough results so far this year. Mika Morrissey obviously had the 40 touches on the weekend. You watched some of that game, probably flying under the radar when you've got a teammate as good as Sarah Howley. And then Holly Ridewood as well, maybe one we haven't given enough attention to, but I watched her on the weekend in really difficult conditions. It was wet and it was windy and it was very wintry, but she was very good and I really liked what I saw from her. And Lily Layton is one that the Gippy Power have really been pushing. She's got a bit of pace and she is able to have some impact as well. So yeah, good to see her getting some love.
I'll give you my two. So we've got a girl and a boy each. I'll start with my boy, Joe Pike from the Falcons, obviously top agent, and we'll talk about him more in depth next week with a mid-season draft preview. But totally underrated in terms of the sense he really did come back with a goal to improve and show a bit more versatility in the ruck, because he was poor in the championships last year and wasn't really able to elevate himself to that next level he needed to.
Yep.
Has come back, and I think he's done that pretty well this year. My girl is Stacia Stevenson, and I'll touch on her in the Eastern game. But, yeah, in terms of a barometer, she really is that for the Rangers. Just provides that constant pressure and gets rewarded with it most of the time as well, and it really did show on the weekend. So those are my two.
Kayla Dalgleish is one that I'm going to give a shout out to. I think she's really showed a couple of different aspects to her game with her competitiveness and her athleticism so far this season. When I did reflect a couple of days on from us doing the Statement Makers squad, I thought, gee, she was one that was unlucky not to come up in either of our squads. So I think it's worth giving her a shout out for what she's been able to produce in the first month of the season. And then just some Sandy Dragons I want to touch on there. The list is so deep and, you know, there's talk that they've got up to 20 players who are possibly in draft conversations at this early stage of the season, with recruiters casting the net so wide. But Dexter Prime is a really skillful interceptor from St. Kevin's. Charlie Rosine's obviously kicked a bag in that Vic Metro trial, wasn't able to get into the squad, but certainly has that burst of power about him. And Ben Sears has pace to burn. So three Sandy Dragons, I think, that deserve a little bit more of a shout out. But when you're playing a team as stacked as them, it's pretty hard to get much of a shout out when we're focusing on so many other players, but certainly a good team to play in front of so many recruiters every week.
For sure. We'll a good segue into the we'll touch on the boys first. We have another deep dive segment. We both focused on a few players and we'll still go through all the games, but there's a few players we will leave towards the end of the boys and girls reviews, and we will give a good deep dive. So first game of the week for the boys, I saw this one. I'm in person, Sandy and Sydney. Sydney got the win, so Sandy's first loss for the season. Obviously, a pretty depleted Sandy squad in terms of, you know, the talent we've seen the first couple weeks. Mitch Kirkwood-Scott and Sam Buck are the two I'm going to go into deep dive with. Buck finished with 5 goals. Kirkwood-Scott was really good off half back in the first half and then actually moved to half forward in the second half. So played a bit of everything, but Lockie Voss down back made a poor decision late, which probably just left that bad-ish taste towards the end, but I think he was really exceptional by hand, really clean in that back line. Lost a few one-on-one battles, and that's probably where he needs to improve if he's to take that next step as that key defender. But, you know, overall, pretty solid game on his behalf. Adrian Cole had a tougher game, I'd like to say. I mean, I felt at times he may have overcommitted to the contest and just given a bit too much, because his one-on-one work is really good, but there were just times I thought he probably left himself not enough space to catch up, or just not enough time to really assess the situation around him, which is usually one of his strengths, and probably lacked a bit of speed at times, but his pressure and second efforts were terrific in the end. So those were really my four from Sandy that wanted to put out in that game. So that was their first loss of the season.
And we're touching on Owen Bader, who played his first game in 637 days, I calculated. So played three games as a double bottom major for Sandy, then was out all of last season with an injury. And then, yeah, just a delayed start to this season with obviously the stack squad that Sandy have had. But he came back down back and no doubt physically imposed himself. But we move on to the Dandenong versus Brisbane game. This was a 76 apiece draw. And Dandy were down by 29 points at three-quarter time. So an enormous comeback from the Stingrays. And a lot of credit has to go to Tyrone Armour. He did kick three goals in the last quarter. So Haileybury having the bye is the reason that Mitch Kirkwood-Scott was playing for Sandringham. Tyrone Armour in action for Dandenong. So he was really, really good up four. Took a couple of one-handed marks where you just go, wow, how's he done that? His ball handling is exceptional overhead. And another Haileybury player in Charlie Rowe caught my eye. He probably didn't do the flashy things that he would have wanted to do, but got some midfield minutes for the Stingrays. And he's a quick decision maker, so that allows him to have some time in traffic and release teammates and that sort of thing. I thought it was a really solid performance without absolutely, having a standout day. Some others that have to get touched on, and I am going to come back to Kane Hurst at the end, but Charlie Orchard down back, his second strong performance in a row. Raiden Bergman, I thought particularly late, had some clutch moments. He was willing to take the corridor kick a couple of times and hit it, and that opened up space forward of the ball for Dandenong to eventually score, and then laid a couple of big tackles, had some pressure acts, that sort of thing. So a really good performance from the Berwick boy. Benny Hopkins, he was good throughout the day, provided a lot of overlap. His kicking improved as the day wore on. And I leave the best two till last. Noah Hibbins-Hargreaves, got a touch on him. He is making a habit of kicking clutch goals. His ability to finish from 40-45 when the game's on the line is elite. He did it against Gippsland. Dandenong didn't come back against Gippsland, but he did kick two goals that kept them in it for a lot longer than they would otherwise have been in it. And then he again did it against Brisbane, a couple of goals both at crunch times, and he's slick below his knees and he's deceptively good aerially. And then Cooper Hines as well, just what can you say about him? He's strong, he's poised, he's efficient, he's powerful, and he's probably unbeatable one-on-one. So a really strong comeback from the Dandenong Stingrays. I'll touch on Kane Hurst later, but those players all played well alongside Harvey Langford, who continued on his strong form.
Move to Calder and Gold Coast, and big win for Calder. We both didn't back him and proved us wrong. They won 91-65 in that battle, and the Suns Academy are pretty decent, so that is a good win for them and gets their season back on track. But Isaac Kakko finished the game, 3 goals and 29 touches, a pretty big stat line for him, 12 inside 50s as well. So
yeah, you know, some tackles I think as well.
Good to see his presence, you know, moving further up the field as well. Yep. Hussein Al Akchar as well, pretty good game from him, 2 goals and 25 touches, bit of a speed machine. Remember seeing him a bit in that preseason. He's a big body as well. And then Hugh Ellison as well finished with 2 goals, 16 touches. So a really, really good performance for Calder. Gets their season back on track a bit. Not that they were ever really in much trouble, but yeah, good to see them back and in the winning column.
Yeah.
Tassie and Eastern. So big win from Tassie, 94-52, defending the home turf really well. That's two in a row in Tasmania. I think the first one we need to touch on is Geordie Payne with a 4-goal, 29-touch performance, eh?
Yeah, certainly. So perfect time to do it as well with the mid-season draft next week for the 19-year-old who obviously attracted some attention at the national draft last year and showing that he can play in all three positions now. He's played on the ball, he's played up forward, he's played down back. He's obviously got the traits that make him really watchable and he really catches the eye, but he's putting some consistency behind him as well. He's got that block of form now, so he's doing everything he can with the attributes that he's got at his disposal. Lenny Douglas continues his really strong start to the season. His ability to find the scoreboard is really, really strong. Another 3 goals for him from 15 disposals. He's that sort of 15 to 20 disposal player as that small forward who's powerful and can go into the midfield. Showed it again. Jasper Hay had a really educational battle, no doubt, with Illero Smith, but more than held his own with 17 hitouts and also got involved around the ground with 6 tackles and 14 disposals. And Jack Baldwin was good in a tough loss for Eastern. He finished with 19 disposals, worked hard up and back as that defender.
Last game of the round and probably not the prettiest of them all, but, you know, Western get another win, 54-32 on a miserable day. It was miserable at Mars Stadium. You watch this, and I guess the first one we need to talk about, and good time to do it as well. Lachie McArthur, will obviously touch on him more in depth next week as well, but, yeah, really big performance at the right time of year.
enormous performance, 21 disposals. A few of them were from kick-ins, but every time he did have the ball in hand, he was very, very clean. And you contrast that with what other players were able to do on the day. It was very wet, it was very windy, and it was very hard to handle the ball. But Lachie McArthur was one who would have taken three or four intercept marks. He would have had a few more intercept possessions at ground level. Every time he got it below his knees, he was clean as well. Provided that drive from half back, he did it from the first 5 minutes of the game. That really set him up for the day. He hit targets by foot as well and kicked a really important goal in a low-scoring contest from about 50. So, yeah, a really impressive day from him and probably the most complete performance that I've seen from him so far this season. Possibly the most complete performance I've seen from him off half back alongside that game against Sandy last year when he intercepted everything in the middle of the year.
Well, it's good to hear, especially his young guns' performances were pretty good, that first game. So he has built a good base, yeah. I guess, to lead into the draft.
I guess the thing with the young guns performance, he was forced to play forward a little bit, and we probably now know that his position is off half back. But yeah, he's done everything he can, you'd suggest, after what he did on the weekend. Maybe a little bit inconsistent at times, but certainly the weekend was a strong showcase of his skills. Just some others worth touching on. I thought Daniel Snell would have taken a lot of confidence from that performance. Yep. Kicked a goal, showed his power and played with that flair that we know that he's got but hasn't necessarily shown this season. Jack Girardi, his ability to hit the scoreboard in a low-scoring game was important. Just a rugged small forwards performance, some pressure, some tackles, and took his opportunities. Tom McGuan, his running patterns allow him to get so much of the footy. And then from a GWV perspective, Harry Lawson was really solid in the midfield. Mitch Lloyd down back. Archie Taylor had moments and Jack O as well.
I'll run through the ladder before we move to the girls, but Sandy still sit on top. Oh, actually, there's seven teams on 16 points, so it's actually a seven-way tie for first, but yeah, it's hard because, you know, Tassie have played two more games and the rest and all of that. Murray, Gippy, Dandy, Weston, GWV and Oakley round out the ladder. And Tassie are leading the country. I don't know that's yet. They played a few more games, but they're actually leading the country now. But we'll move to the girls. I'll start with Geelong Gippy. So I watched... Yep. This was bucketing down rain at La Trobe, and yeah, it wasn't the cleanest of games, but I mean, some performances need to be mentioned, and I'll start with Mika Morrissey, who had 40 touches, and it was not really one that I didn't think she was racking it up for sure, but she was terrific, you know, with every touch, one of the cleanest in the wet. Like, I mean, that ball must have been soaking wet, and I don't reckon she fumbled it even once, but you know, just great stoppage craft. She got moved into the middle with the absence of Sarah Howley in that team, and just her ability to hold her width on the outside and just understand when to take her moment, move it forward offensively. And I reckon, you know, some of them might have not got inside 50, but if you'd had a count of her, you know, her kicks going forward must have been quite a few. And she finished with 31 kicks, which just smart footballer in the end, and a big tackle count as well. So she would, really, that's the game she probably has earned over the first month of footy. You know, she's probably been waiting for that game and it's come.
Yeah, arguably the best winger in the draft crop, as in pure winger ability to run those patterns. So to take her opportunity when she's playing in the inside mid, you say, is really good to see and probably adds another layer to her draft ability. Who else from the Falcons performed well?
Yeah, I'll touch on Caitlin Charles, small forward, and I said to you, she's similar to Bella Gillam of last year. They have really good forward craft. I'd say the difference between Charles and Gillam, Charles just has that a little bit more pace and a bit more, a better forward sense higher up the ground where she's able to push up and also impact around the stoppages as well. And I thought she did that, kicked a really nice goal in the first quarter. I think it was the first goal of the game. Again, really good hands in the wet, which was probably the difference in this game, the Falcons' ability to use it well in wet conditions. Lucy Marishuk was good with her follow-up efforts and her second and her pressure acts. I just thought she was doing those little things really well, and her running patterns as well was something pretty noticeable. She was doing it better than the rest as well. I'll touch on a few Gippy girls as well. Jazz Soudan stood up, lack of Ash Sentry in that team, so really did take, you know, carry most of the load in that game, and it was her breakaway at the stoppage. She loves that sidestep, that evasiveness of her game is, you can see it, and she had a few good moments as well where she was able to get it forward, and the Power were struggling to move it forward at times, but just took that extra class and she was able to do it good in the wet as well. So, yeah, a good performance from her. Zara Gallagher, liked her speed out of D50. She's real quick. And Luca Butters, I thought, was really sound defensively for Gippy. Took a few good marks and was always in the right spots when the ball came inside 50. So that was my wrap for that. And Geelong got up by 14 points in that game.
I'll throw
to you.
Yeah, I'll give my wrap for the Oakley-Western game, which Oakley were able to get up in comfortably. And I think there's actually a few defenders who stood up. So it felt like Oakley had the ascendancy, but clearly when Western went forward, Oakley's defenders were able to show what they could do. Like with Kane Hurst and like with Mitch Kirkwood, Scott and Sam Buck, I'm going to park Sienna Talaridi because I'm going to speak about her at the end in the deep dive. But Sarah Pousty is one who continued her strong form. And it was just another Sarah Pousty performance with her physicality, her willingness to apply herself defensively. And then when she got the ball, she was really good as well. Maggie Marnie puts herself in ball-winning positions, and that was really obvious on the day. Emily Gladman, I've talked about her consistency increasing. I talked about it in the Statement Makers episode we did last week, and it was on show again. She was a real focal point inside 50. She didn't really get outmarked at all on the day, so when the ball came to her, she either took the mark or brought it to ground, finished with 3 goals, real crafty up forward. Charlie Johnson was one who showed her pace and aggressiveness. Zara Neuwirth, I thought, moved really well athletically. We know her ability to shut down, but good to see her at times get involved in offense. That's probably the next step for her game. Chloe Bowne was one of the better players on the day, if not best on ground. I thought her footy smarts and composure were absolutely sensational. And Bailey Martin had some moments, 16 disposals and a goal, which really shows why they've wanted to give the double bottom major some exposure.
Move now to Dandy in Brisbane. Dandy, probably one of their poorer performances of the year, and I doubt they'll dish out anything like that again. But Gemma Reynolds at the top with 30 disposals, 8 tackles, and a pretty sound performance from her. She's been had a stellar start to the year. And Kayla Dalgleish as well, one of my favourites to watch from the Cinerays, 25 touches, 7 tackles, 7 inside 50s, 3 rebound 50s, a pretty good stat line from her, and she's just becoming craftier each week and really elevating her game to the next level. But another loss for Dandy, but they're still on the right track though.
Yeah.
I'll move now, Rebels and Northern, and big win for Rebels. Like I say, whenever a country girls team beats a metro team, it's pretty big, and it shows the growth in the country region. But yeah, Rebels got up by a goal, so tell me a bit more about that finish as well.
Yeah, I initially thought that was the first time all day that GWV hit the front. They're actually in front for about 5 minutes in the second quarter, but nonetheless, it felt like Northern were on top and had the slight ascendancy throughout the day. But yeah, GWV in the last quarter were just able to continue pressing and generate those scoring shots. It was Claire Marnie who kicked the match winner, no surprise there. She was targeted inside 50, won herself a free kick, but that was just courtesy of putting herself in a position to take a contested mark, and the defender sort of panicked, but it was a really strong performance, and she's starting to build a really strong block of form behind her. So yeah, good to see that. She was a little bit quieter throughout the day, but still capitalized on her moment. I'll start with the GWV girls and then move to the Knights. From a GWV perspective, Elise Cook was one who probably wasn't as familiar with coming into the day. I have spoken to people at the club about her, but she really took my eye with her repeat efforts, her willingness to stand up in traffic as well on a day where it was easy to go to ground with the conditions, and her ability to back herself in close and elude contact were all features of what was a really strong performance in close in a game where there was lots of stoppages, as you can imagine, being the wet day that it was. Millie Lang was one who came into it as the game went on. She surprised me with how many touches she finished with, actually, but her last quarter in particular was really good. And on a day where, like we say, it was so wet and territory was so important, her penetrating kick was really damaging. And the best on ground, I thought, for the GWV Rebels was clearly Bella Davies. So her kicking efficiency when she was sweeping across half back was really important. And then she rotated into the midfield, showed she was strong in the contest, really courageous as well. And yeah, on a day like that, her ability to put her head over the ball and try and win it and advance it forward for her team was really critical, and she was able to get herself to the outside at times as well. So another one who had lots of repeat efforts, and worth touching on Bindi Crabtree, who was really rugged in the conditions and adapted to them well, and Claire Lightfoot, who showed a nice turn of speed as well.
Tassie and Eastern. Yeah.
Oh, just some Northern girls as well. Yeah.
My bad.
Holly Ridewood, I thought, was the standout night. Her footy smarts were really important on the day. She applied pressure, which was really important. I think there were over 100 tackles laid by one of the teams from memory, and her ability to escape that traffic and escape the clinches was really important. So she's got a good step and continued her strong start to the season. Zoe Hargreaves positioned herself really well behind the footy when she was positioned there. Kira Lemire took a couple of really big contested marks inside 50 in the second quarter when marks were hard to come by. I think the team each took 16 marks throughout the day, and she took two really big contested marks. So I thought that was a real testament to her ability overhead. And Caitlin Bussatil was another one who was excellent with her pressure. Talia Plunkett was composed and showed her acceleration as well.
Now we move to Tassie and Easton. And Easton, yeah, this was a massive win for the sense that a lot of these girls were probably low on confidence. A few will be quite high on confidence after this performance, but they smashed Tassie 78-20, but it was 77-7 with 10 minutes remaining. So Tassie got two late goals. I'd love to talk about a lot of these girls, but I'm going to keep it as concise as I can. And I'll start with Stacia Stevenson. Like I mentioned, her pressure was terrific. From the first quarter, set the tone really early. So many pressure acts, was consistently finding a way to move her body forward and force that real defensive pressure inside 50. Great read out of the stoppages and, yeah, just a terrific work rate. It was a big game for Georgie Brisbane. Her confidence has admittedly been quite low, and we've seen that in her performance. She hasn't really had that breakout game yet. And it did feel like that early on that she was going to struggle again. She was, you know, she got rewarded for great pressure inside 50. The kick went short, and a kick she'd usually kick, you know, 9 times out of 10. And it felt like it was going to be that type of day again. But from then on, moved up the ground, was a lot more productive. Able to get her hands on the footy, get into space and be that link in transition moving forward. And she was terrific from, you know, that moment on. And she was just such a good asset. Her kicking probably needs to improve a little bit when she moves further up the ground, just to, you know, increase her impact a little more. But yeah, efficient by hand, got on the end of a goal in the end, and really terrific contested marking from her later in the second half as well. So got back to what she's good at, and it was great to see because, yeah, she's been in that form slump. So it's good to see a game like that. I'll touch on Emily Moore. I thought she was terrific defensively, and a day where they weren't really doing much to defenders, she was taking some – whenever Tassie did go forward, she was always in the spot and taking a few good contested marks. Zoe Vozzo, super clean, fast, kicking a few goals for Easton, some really nice ones, but provided a great offensive burst. Have to mention Evie Parker and Georgia Knight. Those two were super productive all day. Evie Parker's put in some really good – a really good string of games together now, and – yeah, her running capacity, she's just able to set up goals when she goes forward, but set up transition, you know, out of the D50. And Georgia Knight was so dangerous inside 50, that real bounce and agility at the drop of the ball. She kicked three in the end. So, yeah, big day for the Eastern girls. Misha Barwin for Tassie was good. I loved her forward tenacity. Mackenzie Williams, probably one of her worst games she'll play, and that was a testament to Eastern's pressure. She was really struggling to get it out cleanly from D50, but did improve as the game went on, and she was great in the second half. So, yeah, that was a terrific game from Easton, a really big performance, and a lot of those girls will benefit from that confidence boost. And I'll throw to you for the last game.
Yeah, Calder just going down in a really tough one against a really strong Gold Coast Academy opposition. We know what they've been able to do, and we know how much class they've got there. But Ali Spegan and Kyla Forbes, a couple that can hold their head high. But that rounds out the girls' review part of the podcast. Now we'll move into
the ladder.
I'll quickly go through the ladder.
Oakley sit on top. Northern Eastern on 16, Bendigo, Gippy, Sandy, Tassie, Geelong, Dandy all on 12 points, Rebels on 8, Western Calder and Murray still looking for their first win of the season. I should just add, the country region is very tight because obviously they split into two. Bendigo, Gippy, Tassie, Geelong, Dandy all on 12 points.
Wow. Yeah.
So, yeah, it will be interesting to come the end of the year. But, yeah, let's move to the deep dive. So we're going to go through some of the plays we watched in certain games, and if you listen last week, Jonty went through Western and Eastern, gave a bit more of a deeper analysis of what made these players' games good, possibly bad, but like just, you know, the positives and negatives to take away from it. So do you want to start?
Yeah, I can start. Okay. So I watched Sione Talaridi's third quarter, I think, against Western very closely. And from a stats point of view, it wasn't a standout from her. She was still best on ground on the day, I thought, or certainly up there, but only the three possessions in that quarter. But what was really interesting to watch was her positioning behind the ball. So we know she's a really strong interceptor, and she started at center half back throughout the quarter. Her direct opponent regularly went up to add an extra number at stoppage for the Jets. What that allowed was Sione Talaridi to be an extra number behind the ball and allowed her to peel off when she needed to and take intercept marks. In that quarter, it wasn't as prominent, but certainly in some other quarters it was. I thought in the second quarter it was particularly strong. She sits between the first layer of defense and the deeper layer of defense, which allows her to come up when she needs to, but also fall back and provides that extra sureness on the last line if Oakley do get into a little bit of trouble and it does get in deep. So that was something which was noticeable as well. She's very physical at ground level. She was playing against an opponent where she did have a height advantage and a strength advantage, and she was able to exploit that as well. Something else which I was quite interested in watching was there were a couple of times where she actually went to spoil, which was good to see. We know her as that contested marking sort of interceptor across the half back line. But when the ball wasn't there to be intercept marked, or it was a lower percentage for her to mark because it could have resulted in a Western mark, she just laid a fist into it. And on one of those occasions, she actually was able to spoil it to her advantage, run onto it, and then provide that bounce off half back. Her penetrating kick really important as Oakley did look to get territory at Port Melbourne. And the other thing as well was she covered the corridor really well. So that made it very difficult when Western did look to go in and looked to come with a little bit of dangerous territory, looked to come through the middle. She was always there, if not taking an intercept mark, then certainly applying pressure. So I thought throughout the day she applied pressure, she took some intercept marks, and most importantly, made good decisions about where she positioned herself behind the footy.
Well, I'll go and then you go and I'll go again. Yeah. But I'll go with my first one, which is Mitch Kirkwood-Scott. So both my players are from the Sandy Sydney boys game on the weekend. And yeah, he started the first half on the half back line, and I thought it was a 70-30 game in terms of positives and negatives. And first thing that takes you is a pressure act play. You know, he'll do all those little things and the team things that make him so valuable on that half back line. Loves to generate those first couple steps to break away and get out of a contest. The only thing that let him down at times, he doesn't look ahead sometimes, and it does kind of break down his ball movement when he'll get tackled and he doesn't know what's around him, and that was probably what let him down. When he was able to move his body towards the corridor, a lot more effective. Understands where the players are kind of going to move through the corridor to aid his transition, and he was terrific in that sense where he was just better able to get a kick away, wasn't panicking about what was coming at him. But yeah, I mean, most his disposals were quite similar, like gets him on the 50 arc and just breaks away from that point.
Yep.
Took a few kick-ins, but terrific kick-ins. Like, that's something you should notice, but, like, pinpoint accuracy into the middle and they're away. Like,
and that's something you need at his size, that kicking efficiency.
But did it really, really well. And then when he moved inside to when he moved to half forward, probably less prominent as the game went on. I mean, Sandy had a good third quarter, but their fourth quarter they were killed by the Swans. That's the truth. But yeah, he's just so prominent with his ability to move into the corridor. He loves that area to exploit, and with his running capacity, he gets space, and he was able to provide a bit of a lead up option. But I thought his best work was off half back. It's probably just that ability now for him to know how to analyze what's ahead of him on the outside rather than just looking, you know, he's good on the inside and the ability to turn inside. Just that extra step ahead of the game would help him because he knows how to get his hands on the footy, generate that drive. But yeah, 70-30 game from him in the end, and yeah, it was definitely one of Sandy's best.
Kane Hurst is the one that I watched on Sunday, and I do concede I did watch this on stream, so that did prohibit my ability to watch some of the things he was doing off the ball. But He's worked himself into some really strong form. He played on Lenny Douglas last week, and I thought he did a really solid job for the Dandenong Stingrays. He's really strong overhead, and I think that ability to win so many one-on-ones, which he does have, stems from that strength overhead, yes, but also his ability to out-muscle his direct opponent. And when he isn't able to out-muscle them and he's caught out of position, what he's able to do is close space late and close space really quickly to at least get a fist in there and not get outmarked. Now, admittedly, there were a couple of times on the day where he was outmarked. I think he has played better games, but I still would have put him in the best six or seven for Dandenong. because he is so crucial in that back line. And he seems to be caught one-on-one regularly because he is playing on such strong opponents. He's given really tough assignments by the coaching staff and he always rises to it. And yeah, that ability to lock down is really, really eye-catching. I think the other thing is he reads the cues of the kicker really well. So he's 189 centimeters and he is the sort of player that needs to be able to take intercept marks if he's going to make it to the next level. And he does that by looking at what the kicker is going to do and then moving to the position where the kick's going to land, moving to the drop zone quicker than his opponent. And that allows him to get his hands on the ball throughout the first month of the season or 5 or 6 weeks of the season. The feature of his game has been that intercept marking, and he showed it again on the weekend, taking 3. He knows when to peel off. He knows when to intercept. And by the same token, he knows when he has to stay on his man because his man's in a dangerous spot. So that decision-making was really, really impressive from him on the day, I thought. And then the other thing was his ability to provide some bounce and drive off halfback. That's probably the next thing that he needs to add to his game. We know how strong he has been when he is trying to win a one-on-one contest. But if he's going to go to that next level, you think he's, with the way the modern game is going, you think he's going to have that offensive ability to his game. And he did provide that at times on Sunday. No doubt that's something he'll look to continue to enhance in his game. He's certainly got the speed to match his opponent when it's going back to goal. So can he do it when he's running off the half back line and setting up play? I think that's something which he has shown sporadically that he can do. He'll look to show it a bit more consistently, and no doubt he'll be given the opportunity to do so as the season wears on.
Sam Buck, my second player, finished with 5 goals, was definitely Sandy's best on ground, and he's one that I sort of caught an eye last year in the preseason, but didn't end up playing a game as a bottom major for the Dragons. But he's in, and in terms of an underrated player that could go under the radar as the game, you know, the games kind of continue in this middle of the year. But yeah, 5 goals, he's a terrific leader, leading presence. He's got great leading patterns, and that was, you know, the main part of his game that got him goals, but it was also his contested ability above his head, knows how to take a really strong grab, and that's where his first goal came from. An early criticism was his general decision making in loose play. His kicking was probably a little off and probably just doesn't size up the rest of the 50 as well as he should when he was, you know, pushed up a lot higher. That's where he struggled a little bit, where he's sort of out of his comfort zone in that sense. But he is so physically imposing inside 50, and he's not massive in terms of, you know, key forward type. He's that good probably 190 that knows how to get his hands above everyone else. And if not, he's pushing his defender to keep a hold of him, and it wins him. And he won him a few free kicks in the end. But yeah, there was one goal, just great read out of the pack that went up, and that forward craft, general forward craft, knowing when your moment is and knowing when to take that risk to go up for it. But yeah, his defensive application as well further up the ground was something that probably could have been better, and that's something that will better his game if he does improve on that. But overall, a really strong game from him. Just 5 goals where every goal was earned really well, and just put himself in great positions to kick 5 goals. But that rounds out our deep dive. We're going to go through the tips and then we'll move to the ally squad.
Yep.
Start with the girls. So Dandy and Sydney on Saturday.
Yeah, Sydney.
Yeah, Dandy haven't been in the academy, so I'm going to go with Sydney. Murray and Calder at Wangaratta.
Calder.
Yeah, I mean, Calder haven't been in great form, but I'd say Calder. Northern and Tassie at PCO.
Northern
as well. Warrnambool game, Rebels and Geelong. This is a yearly occurrence.
Yeah, and really good for the Warrnambool community. I'll go for the Falcons.
I will too. Gippy and Sandy on Sunday.
Gippy.
Sandy, Bendigo and Eastern.
Eastern.
Massive test for Bendigo. They haven't really played a team of this calibre yet. I mean, Northern was a pretty good test for them, actually. But yeah, Eastern, after what they've just done, I'll say Eastern. And Western and Northern Territory Academy are next Thursday. Yep. So we'll leave it.
We'll leave it. All right.
Well, actually, no, give a tip.
Western.
Yeah, Western. That wasn't hard. Boys, Northern Tassie.
Tassie.
Yeah, they're in great form, aren't they?
Yeah.
No.
The Allies are playing Northern.
Yeah, that's true. Northern. Murray and Calder.
Murray.
why are Murray affected by LA that much? They lose Josh Murphy, Ben Kennedy.
Yeah.
I'll just go Calder. Rebels, Geelong.
Geelong.
Geelong, Bendigo and Eastern. This is a...
Bendigo.
This is... You don't see these two teams play very often.
Bendigo.
Yeah, okay. Say it louder. Eastern. Oakley, Western.
Western.
Yeah, this is... Yeah, I'd say Western. This won't be a terrific watch. Gippy and Sandy.
Gippy.
Yeah, Sandy just too depleted at the moment. Okay, Allies squad got announced, obviously, as usual, the day after we record last week. So it's actually been out for a while, but obviously couldn't get to it last week. Let's start with who's not there, because that's probably where we were the most, you know, passionate about. And we did the same with the Metro squad. And we will with Country, which we assume we'll be talking about next week, but can't confirm that right now. Lachie Hogan's is the main one. Mm-hmm. Now, I know you're obviously very passionate. I'll give my perspective on this. Mm-hmm. Yes, he's very stiff.
Mm-hmm.
My perspective, he's up against some pretty darn talented midfielders in that ally squad.
Yeah, he is. Leo Lombard, Sam Marshall.
Salzburger. You even throw Lenny Douglas. I'm not saying he doesn't, you know, he can't match the standards. He's proven himself, Hogan.
Mm.
But at the end of the day, does he genuinely compare to that caliber? He's probably just under it. And he should be in this squad for what he's done. And we know the effort and the work rate he's produced all preseason and even the first couple of games. It is very, very stiff. I think it's just stiff for him because... Well, now he doesn't get to prove me wrong if I'm saying that, right? Like, he doesn't get that opportunity when he should have that opportunity, right? So, yeah, very stiff.
Yeah, I guess where I would differ is he can play off half back. He doesn't need to play in the midfield. Yeah. And I look at some players in the squad that I think he could have replaced off half back from interstate and that sort of thing. And I think he certainly would have held his own off half back. I have watched a fair bit of Bendigo in the first month, and his kicking efficiency is 85%. His disposal efficiency is 85%, and I would have actually thought it was higher because I have seen him miss one target all season that I can distinctly remember. He always hits his targets. His ability to weight his kicks, make the right decisions, and it's not like he's chip kicking backwards, looking for the switch. He takes on corridor kicks and hits them regularly. His running is up there with the best at the Bendigo Pioneers, and he's got deceptive speed as well. He runs a 20-metre in less than 3 seconds. So I look at all of those traits and think, athletically, you look at him and you think, you know, maybe he doesn't have it, but then you look at what he's done on paper, and he certainly does have it. He's got the kicking efficiency, and he's got the aggression you need if you're going to be his size. Yep. So I think he's certainly done enough to at least earn the opportunity to put himself in front of recruiters and prove that, yes, I'm only 177, but I have some attributes that deserve to be looked at.
Yeah.
So that's how I viewed it. And I think if there is an injury, hopefully he's the one that does come into the squad and might get a game later in the championships, but we'll wait and see on that. Yeah. From a Tassie perspective, Harry Elmer may be a little bit unlucky. I know they've been high on him throughout preseason, and Oscar Van Dam was talked about as getting into the squad, obviously just missed. But as that overager has come back into the Tassie program, would have been good to see him given the opportunity. Certainly good to see him back at talent league level after what he's done in the TSL to start the season. I guess we'll run through the players that have made it from the CTL or from the full-time CTL clubs. I'll touch on a player, then you touch on a player. We'll do it that way.
Sure.
I'll start with Lenny Douglas. He's had a really explosive start to the season, probably projects as that forward who pinch hits into the midfield. I touched on that before. His ability to hit the scoreboard, explode away from stoppage, have that power, size up his options, and then hit targets is really good. His pressure as well is something which has been a feature at times, and he can take an overhead mark as well. He's got a knack of producing really good moments for the highlights reel. He's a 2-3 goal, 15 to 20 possession player at his best.
I'll touch on Ricky Mentha, who falls into the Allies as part of the NT Academy, even though he's a Gippy Power product, who falls in with the NT side. You need a bloke who needs to dish out a good championships. Yeah, his name's written all over it. He really needs to stand up and show that he can match it and give something else apart from that forward craft. He needs to push up and provide a real offensive element there. So a lot riding on this championships for Ricky.
Yep, very well summed up. The next one who I'll touch on is Ollie Dean, a ruck from Tassie. I thought his second academy game, he's an AFL Academy member, against Footscray was really impressive, showed his ability to compete and win hitouts against much more physically developed opposition, and has started to show he can get involved around the ground, taking some marks as well. His follow-up at ground level is developing, but certainly still a raw prospect and one who they've invested a fair bit of time into, so hopefully he's able to deliver in the national champs.
Josh Murphy. Lot to love. He'll be very exciting to watch. Just terrific power forward that I think he'll get a hold of what, you know, like similar to what Jed Walter did last year. I think there's that 4 or 5 goal game in his championships series. So very excited to see what he does and hopefully translates that early season form.
Ben Kennedy, one that people are probably a little bit less familiar with. His form hasn't been absolutely outstanding like some of the others to start the season. He's still had his moments though. He's a Xavier College boy, so he's been playing in the APS system and been playing at fullback, but he projects at the next level if he was to make it as one who would play off halfback and use his foot skills really well. So hopefully he gets a chance throughout the championships to show that.
Waylon Davey Motlop, next one I'll talk about. NT Academy as well, so falls into the same bracket as Ricky Mentha. Yeah, he's had a pretty crafty start to the year, and that's what's got him in. You know, those games for Oakley at the start of the year, he was only having about 5 or 6 touches, but he kicked 3 goals from it. So he's that impact per possession, loves to have that kind of razzle-dazzle to his game, and I think we'll see a few moments from, you know, similar in the championships.
Yeah, certainly. Ollie DePauli Qbank makes it. He missed the summer squad for the Allies, but gets in now. He's one who throughout last year I thought he was the best bottom-aged Tasmanian. He's shown his forward craft and his speed, his agility as well throughout the season, and had a really strong game a couple of weeks ago where he had 5 or 6 shots on goal, and is one who, yeah, you can just bank on what he's going to be able to produce. He's coming into some really good form and has that athletic profile to match his strong skills.
Job Shanahan, Bendigo Pioneers, and he'll be quite enjoyable to watch. Has built on his game every round, and that's great to see the progression that he's just adding those extra forward elements that makes him very well-rounded, and exciting to see how he pairs up with Josh Murphy. That'll be very exciting combo in that forward line.
Certainly will be. Geordie Payne, touched on him before, absolutely electrifying off half back and play through the midfield as well, has that strong stoppage craft, goes up forward, able to hit the scoreboard, really good overhead as well, and has that speed to his game.
Sam Marshall and Nate Salzberg are the last two, the two Sandy boys to finish with, but I'll touch on Sam Marshall. Lions Academy is why he's in this Allies team, but he was terrific for Sandy at the start of the year, such an unselfish player and great. Just groundwork, he's clean within the stoppages, and exciting to see how he matches in that midfield and takes it up to some other, you know, takes it up to the metro and country midfields. And even SA, they'll have a decent midfield as well, so he'll be a good one to keep an eye on.
And Nathaniel Sulzberger, as you said, is one who's at Sandy and Caulfield, really hard out at midfield, able to win his own footy in the contest, has that strong stoppage craft. Expect to see him prominent throughout the Allies midfield, uses the footy really well as well. I really like what he's able to do when he gets on the outside and kicks it and can take a contested mark, is shown as well.
That's all. Next week, Talent League review. Probably not as much Talent League next week, but SA and Allies kick off the national championships next week for the boys. So I will be covering that game, and I will give an account of the SA boys as well. So I'll try to give an account of every team as we go through the SA and WA ones. We'll obviously both touch on, you know, the Vics and the Allies, but stay tuned for that. And hopefully we get a Vic country squad as well. So we'll dissect that and hopefully, well, hopefully not. There's not some that have missed out that shouldn't be in it, but we will touch on them if they are. But thank you all for watching. Check out our socials for more as usual, and we'll see you next week.